love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam, hands-free, from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
I had to hold that blind, and it was trying to flip me over backwards in the chair. And finally, I thought, this ain't worth it. I just laid my gun down, and me and the blind kind of rolled backward down the hill into the holler. I was intent on saving that blind for whatever reason. I should have just let it go. It would have been in Indiana before too long. Yeah.
Tonight we're going to be talking about an article in North American Whitetail called Sign of the Times. It's by Gordon Whittington. It's from the October edition. He's going to talk about hunting over scrapes, when that kind of became popular and why it did, and then why you should still be using that today. And I wanted to go over this one because hunting over scrapes can be one of the best strategies for the pre-rut, which is coming up. So I thought it'd be a good one to lead into some more. We're going to talk about some other stuff we do during the pre-rut. I thought this would be a good article to lead into that and talking about what we're going to be doing in the upcoming week and a half or a week or so. We're still kind of in that October lull period right now, but within the next few days, especially with this colder weather where we're at, we're going to start seeing more of that pre-rut phase kicking in, I think. But before we get started, we'll do our normal rut report / field report, whatever. Nate, I know you get out last weekend?
Sunday. Sunday night. I went three or four does. I couldn't tell exactly what they were. Came under me right at dark last Sunday night. They made their way underneath me and then went out into a bean field. Nothing impressive there. I did get home, and my cell camera sent me pictures later. The buck I was after, a really nice buck. He was at the other end of the woods. I couldn't go over there safely, in my mind, where I wanted to be, where he came out, mm-hmm. right there at last light with the wind that we had. I just wasn't going to chance that. The direction he came from, I think it probably would have all been okay. I guess we can only speculate at this point, you know. But he was out moving in daylight. That was, what would that have been, about the 13th, 14th, I think. He was moving in daylight. Right. Then I had another nice buck moving in daylight on another food plot the next night. I had two good ones on their feet in daylight hitting food sources this past week. Now, both in the evening. Since then, nighttime activity from one or two mature bucks is all I've got on the cameras. Neither of those bucks have really been around on camera, those two nice ones I was talking about, mm-hmm. Moving in daylight. Those guys haven't been on camera too much after that since then.
So as far as what's coming in the shop and what people are seeing, buck-to-doe ratio is really almost leveled out now. Now, bucks as in not mature 4- and 5-year-old deer, 2.5- to 3-year-old bucks, usually the ones that get out earlier than the rest of them do anyway. And I don't know if I'm attributing that to more guys that are hunting right now than was 2 weeks ago and they're just getting that first one out of the way, or they're being a little more active. I'm not sure. But, yeah, the buck-doe ratio's leveled out quite a bit.
So I'm trying to remember. It would have been Saturday, so I wouldn't have covered it on the last podcast. Saturday evening of this past weekend, I sat and saw close to 10 does and fawns, probably 10 or 12, and a little buck, and then right at last light, probably 20 minutes before last light, saw a decent buck all the way across the bean field. Didn't get real good video of him, couldn't see him really well. 3.5 or 4.5-year-old deer, potentially a shooter, but like I said, I couldn't see him that well. But he was up in the daylight moving. He was kind of running through the bean field. I don't know exactly where he came from or what he was doing, but the next morning, just saw that same one little buck. And then it kind of warmed up, and actually tonight, I just climbed out of the tree probably an hour ago, was the first time I've been since then, and saw a handful of does, say five or six, nothing else. I did see a good buck on the drive out who was close to the road, so he had obviously been moving at daylight, at the end of daylight at least. He might have been bedding close by there. There is some decent bedding, I think, in that area, but starting to see some bigger bucks on their feet during the daylight, I think. Which is getting to be that time of year, too, with the pre-rut coming up. So, especially with this cold front coming through, I think probably this whole weekend should be pretty good. I don't know what you're looking for, if you're going to try to get out this weekend or not.
Sunday's probably going to be my only day, Sunday evening this week. I think they're giving rain. I believe they're giving rain. I don't know how ambitious I'm going to be. Maybe depending on what wind I got, you know.
Yeah.
Or maybe what I see on camera tomorrow and Saturday. That might change my opinion. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to get wet just yet. We'll see.
Yeah. It's not quite the first week of November. I'm going to be out there no matter what kind of stage.
That's right. Yeah. If there's any lightning icons on the forecast, I'm probably going to be on the couch.
That's probably the place to be. So we'll jump into the article then. Like I said, it's called Sign of the Times by Gordon Whittington. He starts by saying, back when the point of hunting whitetail shifted from needing a buck to merely wanting one, nearly everything else about it changed too. In the wake of this paradigm shift, we were left with a very different hunting culture. There was a sweeping revolution in not just why people hunted, but also how. And in a sense, it directly led to the advent of a tactic that for years was right on the cutting edge, scrape hunting. And then he goes into kind of the early, he says, a practical approach, the kind of the early days of hunting. In the mid-20th century, as restocked whitetail herds were growing in the wild, and wildlife agencies were In the mid-20th century, as restocked whitetail herds were growing and wildlife agencies were reopening seasons, most whitetail hunters still mainly wanted meat for the pot. Does were legally off-limits in broad parts of the landscape, so bucks were the target. Anything with antlers was good enough. So I wanted to kind of stop there, not that it has anything to do with scrape hunting or anything, but that's a totally different world from where we're at now. You couldn't even shoot a doe legally back then. Not really a big conservation program as far as killing big deer, for sure.
That was their way of herd management, or at least herd growth, which is a way of herd management. So, yeah, that's, you can't kill mama if you want any babies.
Right. At least that was a sort of conservation for what they were needing, obviously. The numbers weren't where they are now. So, you know, like you said, you can't kill the does, then that was their idea of bringing the herd back, I guess. The herd numbers, which in a way makes sense, but also if you kill daddy, you can't have babies either. But so he kind of, I skipped over a little bit here, but he kind of, he talked about a lot there in the first part about why guys were hunting in there back in the day, and really it boiled down to they're hunting for meat. They were getting out there to hunt to put food on the table, basically. So they were shooting anything and everything. Which is still what some guys do, which is fine. But then he kind of starts talking about nowadays and how it switched and when it switched, kind of. So he says, while it sounds far-fetched these days, back then some of the most skilled hunters had never tried to target specific deer. Thus, the process was poorly defined and not widely understood. How could you go from just dreaming of a big buck to actually finding one? There weren't any trail cameras. That left only three practical means of confirmation: through a visual sighting, by finding shed antlers, or by locating, identifying, and interpreting sign of a big buck that a big buck had left behind. With the overall lack of published information on the buck sign back then, there was confusion about what it was and what it meant. Even as North American whitetail was getting off the ground nearly 40 years ago, some hunters called rubs scrapes. They'd heard the term and knew it referred to buck sign, but they assumed a scrape was a tree trunk that had been scraped by antlers. Some other hunters referred to rubs as hookings, and some called true scrapes pawings or scratchings. Still others preferred ground scrape, presumably to make sure people knew they were talking about scrapes and not rubs. There's still a ton of confusion, I feel like, on that, whether it's guys we talk to through the consulting business or just guys that come in the shop and shooting crap, telling deer stories, and talking about scrapes and rubs, I still feel like there's a lot of confusion on, okay, a rub's on a tree and a scrape's on the ground. You know what I mean?
I think they know what they're seeing. I just don't think they have the right terminology. They're mixing up the terminology. I mean, I think they understand the difference between a rub and a scrape. They're just mixing up what they're calling them.
Right.
From the guys that I talk to.
Yeah. Which, like he said, they were fighting that back then. And I still think that's a thing now, whether it's just they don't know. Yeah, they don't know what they're calling it or whatever, but which is understandable because you see scraped antlers on a tree, that's a scrape, you know, whatever it is. The problem with that is most of the time those actual rub lines, they're not using during the day, and they may only go rub their antlers on that tree one time, but they'll hit the right scrape over and over and over and come back and check it and make sure their scent's still fresh in there and hit that during the daylight. So that's where it's important to know the difference, because if you're hunting a rub line, you might be wasting your time. Whereas if you're hunting, that means there's a big buck in the area, or at least a buck in the area. But whereas you're hunting that scrape line, you might be more apt to see daylight movement.
Yeah, I think if you find a good rub line, he might have just been in the mood to work his neck out for 15 minutes one day, and he hit 5 or 6 trees down through there. Yeah, it might look impressive, but it didn't mean much to him, you know.
Yeah.
That was just something to occupy his time for not very long, and he's not planning on coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what your article's talking about 40 years ago, you found rub line 40 years ago, you're in a hot spot.
Yeah.
And you didn't tell anybody. I mean, they're just deer sign, you know, and so no cameras, not a lot of deer. There was a lot of deer, but not like we see today. And so, yeah, you know, sign, you know.
Yeah.
There's a deer somewhere, or at least there was, you know.
Yeah. And I think it is still useful in that sense of, you know, there was, or maybe probably possibly still is, depending on how fresh that rub is, that there is a buck in that area. So especially like, say you're hunting public ground, if you can get in a spot where there's a bunch of rubs and there's old rubs, like year over year rubs, and then there's some fresh ones in there with it, you know, that's probably a decent place to be in that general area. It doesn't necessarily mean you want to set up on that rub line, but, you know, sign in that sense is that at least it's confirmation that there's deer in the area. I know we talked about this on one other podcast maybe, but the place I was hunting tonight, actually, there'll be deer come in there, mature bucks, and they'll stay for 2 weeks and then they'll be gone. Well, if I go in there and I'm seeing, because 3/4 of the year, there won't be much buck sign through there because it's just kind of a cruising spot for them, and they'll come in, hit a doe. They'll stick around, like I said, for a couple weeks and then leave. If I'm walking in and I can remember a specific incident last year and I see a fresh rub on the way in, or a couple, or maybe a fresh scrape, that tells me that, okay, I'm probably going to have a buck on my camera when I go check it, and there's a likelihood that he's in the area now, you know, so it's at least good for that, for sure. So we'll get back in the article a little bit here. He says, as detailed features on scrapes began filtering out to the public, the confusion in some cases actually increased. That's because you didn't just have scrapes. Within that broad category, you had community scrapes, primary scrapes, boundary scrapes, field scrapes, and even more. Whatever the author deemed worth calling a category, in essence, became one. It's just unfortunate that the result might have caused more confusion than clarity. So maybe that's part of where all that came from, too, because not necessarily that there are a whole bunch of different types of scrapes, but there definitely are. I mean, like you said, a field scrape isn't necessarily the same as a big community scrape in the middle of a woods.
You find them in different spots.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And used for different things, or like you said, where that buck may just come in and want to work his neck out for 15 minutes or rub a whole bunch of trees. Well, he may have just been feeling frisky walking the field edge, and, well, there's a branch I can lick, so I'm going to lick it and then paw the ground, and that never gets hit again.
Yeah. You know?
So that maybe that's some of the confusion, too. So he continues and says one of the early misconceptions revolved around what the scrapes even were. Yes, they'd been pawed out by the bucks, but why? Back then, it was widely held that a scrape was a place a buck would create, urinate in, and then assuredly return again and again, hoping to find a hot doe waiting for him there. Hunt that spot often enough, and sooner or later, you'd catch Mr. Big on the scene. Of course, we quickly realized there was more to it than that. For one thing, there were a lot more scrapes than most hunters realized, and not all were worth setting up over, kind of like what we were just talking about. Even the good ones weren't worth hunting for long. Sure enough, after spending untold hours watching scrapes grow cold and eventually fill in with leaves, many hunters grew disenchanted with the idea. Especially frustrating were those obvious scrapes on the edges of fields, meadows, and clear cuts. They looked so good. Sadly, even if they continue to be reworked, the best action almost always occurred outside legal shooting hours. And back then, no one had trail cameras to confirm which bucks had done the nocturnal pawing or branch licking. It was easy to wonder if you were going about it in the right way. So, that's something we hit on real quick. Just because there is a scrape there doesn't mean that's the one you need to be setting up on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just walking around the woods, well, we've all seen those scrapes that look like maybe they were just worked last night or something, but then yep. Maybe it's like, say you're passing it on your way to your stand. The next time you pass it, it hasn't been worked. And the next time it's covered up with leaves, and the next time it's really not even there anymore.
Yeah. All three of my main food plots right there around home. One of them's about a half acre, three quarters of an acre. The other two are pretty small, maybe a quarter of an acre. But I try to get. I like being in. I got a lot of shingle oaks. I like hunting in a shingle oak. Of course, they keep their leaves all winter. I feel like I can hide good up in there. Anyway, of course, those shingle oaks a lot of times have low hanging branches. If I can have a big scrape established within 15 yards of my stand right there on the edge of a food plot, I'm mainly just wanting to use that scrape as if he gets in the food plot, messes around, he's probably going to come check the scrape. It's within range of me, and it's also occupying his mind, hopefully to let me get drawn back on him. I'm lucky enough to have one or two good scrapes within range in every food plot. And again, that's all I'm using them for is hopefully just to lure him in to where I want him to be to try to get a shot at him. But I keep my cameras on him too. The does will come around. They'll rub their face up on the licking branch. You know, all the bucks that come in there, they're going to scent check the scrape, see what's going on, you know. That's where I am. That's where I'm focused right now in the pre-rut. I feel like everything's pretty much shaken down. All these bucks have moved from their summer range to their fall range, and they're kind of getting settled in now is what I feel like, and they're seeing who's still around or what new buck is around now, and they're trying to figure everybody out and really get their range locked down. I feel like scrapes are a great way to really take inventory right now what you might have for the rut. They're all hitting the scrapes and really trying to see who's where.
Yeah, and like you talked about where you have those scrapes kind of around your food plot. I do this. I know a lot of guys do it. You go in and just cut a small tree down, bury it, and make your own mock scrape in that food plot. They'll come check it when they hit the food plot.
Oh, yeah.
It's not necessarily going to bring them across the 100-acre field, but if they're on the other side of that food plot or coming in, put it in bow range, maybe what draws them in for a shot.
Yeah.
And what you said there about inventory, and go ahead and put your camera on that, and then at least that'll give them a spot to stop. You can get a decent picture of them while they're at that licking branch or working that scrape, you know.
You know what, and you know when
at
that point.
Yep. So I think they're a really good tool for that, and especially everything you said there about what they're doing this time of year really makes them a good place to be in the pre-rut. So we'll get back to the article. He goes on to talk a little bit about some... more, what do you call it earlier, publications coming out about scrapes. So there was more and more information. And he says, from there, the fascination with scrape hunting seemed to grow quickly. So did reader interest in mock scrapes, at least as far back as 1988. Those also were being discussed in our pages. It was a time of rapid innovation and excitement. The number of big deer was on the rise, and everyone was looking for any little edge that might make the difference. And armed with the right knowledge and tools, many hunters experienced success hunting over scrapes. Because most scrape use occurs between mid-October and early November, bow hunters often enjoyed the best of this action. The advent of portable tree stands went hand-in-hand with this, as did new rut scents formulated to use in and around both natural and mock scrapes, electronics such as trail cameras, and later, the trail camera, or I'm sorry, he says, electronics such as the trail timer, which I think we talked about, maybe it was the first one or maybe some other time. I think Jeff might even hit on it again the last time. But so the advent, such as the trail timer and later the trail camera itself, helped clarify when activity was happening. The intel allowed hunters to focus their efforts on the better scrapes and times. So that's where if you find one of those scrapes and you're not sure about it, if you've got a camera, you can set it up on it and then you'll know, are they using this scrape at all, and if they are they using it during the daylight? Is it worth sitting over? So we have so many tools at our disposal that they didn't have.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe some of this was why some of that stuff started happening and coming out, because guys got more excited about hunting those big deer, and they were looking, like he said, for any little edge. So you start getting more and more technologically advanced. Then we get into cameras and all that, and cell cameras now, putting them on scrapes and stuff. That's huge for us as far as figuring out what scrapes to hunt and that. And it can definitely be a good strategy for this time of year. I remember an old Roger Ragland video. I think I have a DVD copy of it now. It was a VHS. It was called the Scrape Rattle and Roll, I think, and it was all about it was all about hunting scrapes. And it was just like this guy's talking about. You know, he'd go in there, like this whole video was dedicated to that kind of thing. He was doing it in late season, which we'll get into when the late season rolls around, because that's when the bucks start hitting those scrapes again, where they don't during the rut. But he'd just go in there and find some hot sign and scrapes or whatever and set up almost right on top of them, you know, 10, 15 foot off the ground in this climber, and really what he's talking about here, and killing big bucks on them. So,
yep.
I mean, it worked back then. It stands to reason that it still works now, you know. Especially, like I said, those guys doing it with nothing but walking in with their old, like the first generation climbing stands and
Widowmakers.
Going in and finding that sign and just sitting up on it. So, yep. I mean, now with cameras and stuff, we've gotten away from it a little bit, like with the popularity of food plots and bait in some states and stuff like that. We've really gotten away from going in and finding that kind of sign and doing some boots on the ground scouting kind of stuff and some observation sits and using that to our advantage too. And there's no reason we shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much value in still using that stuff that the old timers were using. And like I said, that he was using back in the late 80s, early 90s before they had all the gadget stuff we have now.
Yeah.
Why not use that too? It's still a tool you can have in your belt.
I'm not sure that, you know, guys today aren't putting in just as much time as what we did back then. It's you're putting in your time before it's hunting season. You get the trail cameras out there. You get your mock scrapes. You get all this stuff. Whereas back in those days, Roger Ragland, you're talking about late 80s or early 90s, he went out during hunting season, and that was, you know, he would do those observation sits where we do now. We do observation cell cameras.
Yeah.
You know, so I think the time is still put in. It's just a different time of year that you're putting it in. Guys are still going out in the woods. You're still checking your cameras. You're still setting up. You're changing your cameras. You're still moving stands, or you're doing your tree trimming. Mm-hmm. Back in those days, we were setting up stands, tower stands or whatever. Now, you may not set up a tower stand, but you're going to go in there and scout a tree, or you're going to cut a few limbs earlier. You're just not doing it during the season like we had to back then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think technology's helped you out that way.
Yeah. And that's not to say there's anything wrong with all the newer stuff, and definitely food plots. I mean, we talk about those until I'm blue in the face. I'll talk about those and do videos on them and stuff. But and how valuable that is. I mean, food's one of the biggest things. But maybe number one, you're on a property where you have no control over the food. If you just got a permission property, or you can't put food plots on because most of it's farm ground, and you can't do anything else with it. When the crops are gone, the crops are gone. And nowadays, with the combines and stuff these guys are running, it ain't leaving a lot behind. Unless you get, you know, the occasional guy that fills the hopper over the top.
Yeah.
But, most of the time, there's not that much left when they get done.
Yeah.
So this is stuff that those guys can use for sure. And even if you do have those properties where you're putting food plots on, if you're not seeing the kind of deer you think you should be, you can still go in during the season and do that scouting like they used to do. Just add it on top of what you're doing before the season and using with your cameras. I mean, I think you'd be that much better off for it, as long as you're not intruding too much and, you know, you're being smart about it.
Yeah. But low impact is definitely pushed. Feels like more and more all the time. You know, you hear guys talking about lower impact. So it's not as popular of an idea to go out and do the in-season scouting, you know. But I've done it.
But you don't have to.
Yeah. But I've even done it recently. And maybe I was hunting stupid and I didn't realize it, you know, but I wasn't seeing what I thought I should be seeing, you know. Not seeing the activity I was earlier in the season or something. So I'd go out and I'd walk around and I'd change, you know, I'd change stand locations based on what I saw. I've even done this just recently, you know, man, I found some stuff that, just out of sight, you know, in the woods, I'd get over there and that's where they were moving, you know, so I found out I needed to be over there. So I don't get everything set up for opening day of bow season and think that's the way it's got to be the whole season. Cause it sure ain't.
No. It's going to change.
Yep. Yeah.
And we tell clients that when we go to their property and set it up for them, we'll say, number one, we've added, most of the time, we've added food because they didn't have enough. That's going to change things right off the bat. This is just where we expect them to be. You're the one hunting this. You know where they've been in the past. So when you get out there this fall, don't think this is just absolutely where that stand placement has to be, where that camera has to be. If you're seeing something else, adapt to it. Move. As long as it's not, as long as you're not doing it at 9 in the morning, you know, or 6 in the evening, get out there in the middle of the day, if it's especially this time of year when they're not moving that much, go move a stand around. As long as your wind's not blowing over a bedding area and you're not leaving too much of your scent around, go out there and change and adapt and do some of that in-season scouting. You know, like you said, if you do see something different going on, make a move.
Yep.
If you have to, especially if you weren't doing any good where you were at to start with.
Yeah.
And we're getting later into the year now where you want to have your stands in the right place coming up for these next couple weeks.
Oh, yeah.
So.
And if you can, if you find a rainy day or something, you know, if you got a chance to move those stands in, that I feel like that that really covers a whole lot of scent, you know, commotion. If you can do it, then it's a perfect time.
Yeah, because you're going to leave scent when you go in pretty much no matter what.
Oh,
I mean, I've heard of guys using those PVC waders, which would be a great idea. But you still got to
get hot.
Yeah. You still got to spray them down and all that and go through all of that stuff to not leave too much scent behind it. And you're still bound to leave something.
Yep.
But like you said, if you can go in and do it either on a rainy day or before rain, at least that rain's going to come in and wash your scent away sooner. So it's not going to linger as long.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're talking about, low impact. If I go into the woods and I'm brushing up against all this brush and leaves and limbs and whatnot, and it's not going to rain, 4 or 5 hours later, that buck walks through there and smells me. He's going to remember that.
Yeah.
And he may not come back.
And yep.
So be smart about it.
Yeah.
You know, still, that's kind of an underlying thing with everything. Your scent's still huge, but that rainy day thing, that's definitely could be a way to do it, as long as you're not afraid to get a little wet.
Yep.
But
obviously, don't go do it in a thunderstorm.
Don't go moving your metal stands around in a lightning storm.
Yeah.
Not to say I haven't done that before. Me and Tubbsy were putting up a buddy stand one time, and it was early October. And it was kind of a new spot. He'd farmed it forever but never hunted it. And he said, we see deer here all the time. I was like, well, let's put a stand up. You know, we didn't really know what we were doing at the time. But we ended up in a really good spot. However, it was early October. And we packed this stand in the box. And we put it all together right there at the tree. And sure enough, here comes a big storm, like a gully washer rolling in. So we're hunkered up under this tree, under this cardboard box that's falling apart around us, trying to keep the rain off of us long enough to where we get this stupid stand put up. Well, finally, we just decided we're just going to have to get wet, so we ditched the box and put the stand up and left. But, yeah, maybe check the weather forecast a little bit. If it's going to be a thunderstorm, maybe you don't want to go do that.
I hunted one time, and speaking of thunderstorms, I had permission to hunt property that's like pretty close to Scrub Hill, which is basically the highest part in Wayne County. Mm-hmm. I have to walk through a 20-acre field to get to the woods. Well, I got in there. Well, then it started lightning and carrying on, and I'm in a tree stand, and it's a tower stand, so there's metal from top to bottom. I'm grounded really well. I'm thinking, I need to get out of here, right? The problem is I get on the ground. I got aluminum bow, right? I get on the ground. I've got to walk through the highest part of Wayne County through a 20-acre field to get to my truck holding an aluminum bow and lightning popping everywhere. So I did, but it wasn't a real comfortable feeling, I can tell you that.
Was the walk out faster than the walk in?
You're darn right it was.
It's a borderline run, I'm guessing.
But, oh, man.
Yeah. Maybe check the weather before you go in and do that kind of stuff.
It makes for a good story.
Oh, well, yeah.
I remember, years ago, I was probably 15 or 16, gun season. Oh, first season, Saturday afternoon, I was sitting in a little pop-up blind, you know, sitting on the ground on a field edge. I can't remember why I was sitting there, but I thought, ah, that's a good spot. You know, it wasn't, but that's where I was sitting. I was looking at my phone. I just did have a phone. I was looking at the radar, and I thought, that looks like a storm coming. I looked at the radar. Yeah, it's a storm coming. I thought, ah, maybe it'll pass pretty quick. I'm sitting there, and I could see a long ways to the west and looking at it, and all of a sudden, you can see dust flying. You can see leaves. You can see some twigs falling out of trees. You know, I thought, man, this could get wild. And that hit that blind. I didn't have a stake down or anything. That hit that blind. And I mean, I'm a big guy. You can't see me here, but I'm a big guy. I had to hold that blind, and it was trying to flip me over backwards in the chair. And finally, I thought, this ain't worth it. I just laid my gun down, and me and the blind kind of rolled backward down the hill into the holler. I was intent on saving that blind for whatever reason. I should have just let it go. It would have been in Indiana before too long. But for whatever reason, my priority was that $60 pop-up blind.
Not the $200 gun.
Not my shotgun or my chair, you know. I have no idea why I thought that was a good idea. And if you guys were out hunting in that, you're not very self-respecting. Yeah. We all should have been home that afternoon.
Oh, boy. We'll go out there and not even think about that kind of stuff, you know, is what's funny. Because all you got to do is look at the, you know, hourly forecast or whatever, and you can see, hey, there's a thunderstorm coming, or sometimes we just get so hard-headed, we'll think, yeah, but I'll be out of there before it comes through. It won't be through till dark, you know, and then you end up getting caught in it. But
yeah, I flew a kite a lot when I was a little kid, and then one time there when I was about 16 or 17, it was a camo that time.
You flew a hunting bottle.
Oh, huh? Man.
Oh, yeah. So what I wanted to talk about after we got done with the article is, like I said, the pre-rut's right around the corner. This will be the 22nd when this goes on, when this airs, or goes up, I should say. So, about another 3-4 days, we're looking at one of the best weeks of the season. And hopefully the weather holds out for us. But, Nate, I want to get your kind of thoughts and ideas. Obviously, we talked about scrape lines, but we're not necessarily into hunting those rut stands just yet. Maybe if you see some certain activity, you're going to key in on them. But what are you kind of looking for, like, if you can, if you're going to, or if you would be able to get out this next upcoming week, what's kind of some stuff you're looking at as far as spots or what you're looking to hit, mornings, afternoons, whatever it may be?
I would like to get in somewhat close to bedding in morning. If I was going to be able to go on a morning hunt, I'd like to try to get in somewhere close to bedding. Not really focused on being on the dominant downwind side of it like I would if I was trying to hunt a buck in the rut, you know. In the rut, I'd want to be on the downwind side of a thicket, hoping that I could catch him cruising, you know. The mature bucks know that it's not yet, you know, it's not ready yet, but I'd like to be somewhere close to his bedding, if I could be, in the morning, hoping that he's just up messing around still. He's feeling good enough, he's excited enough that he's not ready to lay down. And he's out cruising around making some scrapes or something, you know. Just catching him being lazy and late in the morning. If I could hunt in the mornings, that's what I'd want to do. Evenings, I'm still going to focus on food. Hoping that he'll come out early. Or before dark, I should say. You know, if he's coming out before dark, I'm calling that coming out early. Mm-hmm. Not the first one on the food plot.
Right.
Yeah, hoping that I can catch him moving before dark. Coming and hitting the food, refreshing those scrapes, you know, making his presence known. That's what I'd be doing hunting the evenings. I know I'm going to get to hunt Sunday evening if I'm brave enough to get out in the rain or if it's not raining, you know. But if I'm hunting, that's where I'm going to be, food in the evening still, trying to catch him, making his presence known still.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think if the rain gets out of here Sunday and Sunday evening starts cooling down.
Then
Sunday evening and Monday evening, depending on how long it stays cool, I think we'll start seeing a few big bucks moving just because they kind of want to, but it's a little warm yet. But if it cools down a little bit, then that kind of want to is going to turn into a little something.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to get hot, but they might start moving a little bit. I expect to see some more mature deer come in the shop this week if it's cool a day or two. Mm-hmm. I do.
I think I'd heard the moon guys talking around the 25th. I thought I'd heard those guys saying that was supposed to be good. That's I think four days.
We're like right in the middle of the full moon now.
Yeah, so yeah.
And generally, in and around that full moon is one of the best times for daylight movement. Mm-hmm. So we're hitting that really about right. And then I don't know where that puts it in November, but at least for now, it's hitting at a pretty good time of year for us as far as that goes, as far as daylight movement. So like what you said about in the mornings and the evenings, kind of what I'm thinking too. If I can get on a good travel corridor with maybe a scrape on it somewhere or one of my mock scrapes for the morning, catch him coming back running through there, because they're getting that time of year where they're going to be hanging out, moving more in the mornings.
Yeah.
So maybe you hadn't been hunting them most of October. This is where we can really start looking at more morning hunts, especially those cooler ones, to catch them moving in the daylight, because they're getting ready for the rut.
Yep.
Like you said, the big boys know it's not here yet, but they know it's time to start getting ready and start inventorying their own area like we would, you know, using those scent lines and scrapes and whatnot. So kind of starting to hunt more with a rut mindset in the morning, but still not quite there. I'm still not going to quite hunt those rut funnels, or like you said, on the downwind siding, a downwind side of a real thick bedding area, whatever, doe bedding, or all day. I'm not going to still not really sit in mid morning, you know, all day sits. But then in the evenings, that's going to be where you're kind of going to see them more back to what they were doing the rest of the month as far as going hitting food. A big thing right now is that green to green transfer they're doing. So where the beans are turning now, most all of them that I've seen are pretty much turned out of green by now. And a lot of them are going to be out by the end of next week for sure, I'd say. A lot of the corn's already gone and it's going. So their green food sources are dwindling. A lot of the brush and the browse in the woods is going to start dying soon. So if you got those good green brassica plots or clover plots or whatever they are, that could be a really good spot for these upcoming evenings. And like you said, they are going to be scent checking those scrapes on those plots in the evenings too. But they're going to be in that, I think they're going to be in that kind of same earlier October pattern, but they're going to be hitting those green food sources even more than they would have been then, because there's not as much competition for food.
Yeah.
So if you've got those good food plots, it'd be a really good place to be in the evenings, in my opinion.
And I think your mature bucks are going to hit those acorns pretty hard right now. They're going to fatten up. They're still going to fatten up because they're going to quit eating here before long.
Or
they're not going to eat as much.
Yeah.
And they know they're going to have a good supper before they go out on the day. You know, and that's what they're fixing to do. So acorns is always good this time of year if the weather's right. If it's cool and they're going to hit them in those early evenings if the weather's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this is going to be kind of one of the last bits of the year where they're really going to start hitting those acorns, because, like you said, the next couple weeks, 3 weeks after that, they're going to be chasing does, then they're going to be with does, and then they're going to be looking for does again. And then after that, pretty much the acorn crop's gone, or it ain't no good anymore. So this is going to be kind of one of those. If you've got those good oak flats,
If you've set on an oak flat in the early season, don't give up on it yet.
Yeah.
You might give it one more or two more cool periods before the rut starts. Now, once you get into past the pre-rut, all bets are off there. But they'll mash them acorns when they can.
I do remember last year, my cameras were, man, they got hot. And we even talked about this earlier in one of the earlier podcasts. Some guys, I think they're Pennsylvania or New York, they were talking now, late October, early November was their best trail camera activity. I'll vouch for that too, like 28, 29, 30, 31, November 1, 2, and 3, or that stretch right there last year. My morning scrape activity was just phenomenal. I had mature bucks hitting scrapes every day. One of them was even like clockwork, five or 6 days in a row, you know. Why wasn't I there? I don't know. You know? Man, they went crazy last year. Daylight movement, good bucks. They were hitting those scrapes. They were, well, I'm calling it being lazy in the mornings. They hadn't went back to bed yet. They were just out running around still. They weren't for long, you know, an hour daylight, after daylight, and it was over. But they were still out messing around. They were feeling good enough. They wanted to be up doing something. But they weren't just going crazy yet.
Right. I like what you said about last year too, because that reminded me of something that you still want to look at, like, if you have trail camera pictures from the last couple of years, or like that old sign that's still there, that's going to be, you know, like, if, like you said, you had those bucks moving in that time range, that's a pretty good indicator that this year, somewhere around that, they're going to be moving again. Because generally, that's the time of year. It's not going to be to the day, likely. It might be. But within, you know, 4 or 5 days of that, when they were moving big last year, they're probably going to be doing it again this year.
Yep.
Like I talked about that small piece where those bucks will come in for like a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much every year, it's between November 5th to 11th or November 11th to 18th, depending on the year. That's when I know there's going to be at least one, if not two or three mature bucks moving through there.
Yep.
Now, whether I'm there on the right day or not, last year it fell on shot. I had three mature bucks in there. All three of them were on shotgun days. So I was here working, wasn't even hunting.
Yeah.
But like 9 o'clock in the morning all the way to 1 in the afternoon, that middle of the day period is when they were using it. But
man.
So, you know, that's something I'm going to look at. Where were my bucks last year during this pre-rut phase? What cameras were hot? What spots were hot then? And then if I got the right wind, the right weather for those spots, that's where another place to look at. So if you got that trail camera stuff, I try to always keep, I don't keep all the doe pictures and all that stuff, but if I've got like an interesting picture, like I had some hogs on a camera last year and a couple head of cattle, so I've got those kept on there. But pretty much any racked buck that I get on camera, now I have them on like 3 photo bursts, so I may not keep all 3 pictures, but I'm going to at least keep 1 picture of that racked buck. That way I can go back and see, okay, last year on October 29th, there was this buck on this camera at this spot. And then I can do that from year over year. And then I can learn from that. And that's a really good way to hunt this year is to base off what you're doing off of what they did last year.
Yeah. Right now, I only sort my pictures as to by month. I've thought about trying to go as far as each individual buck, where all I get him, you know, make a folder of each buck, you know, and see if I could track him. And see if I could try to establish better patterns. You know, I know there's guys out there that are doing it. I've just not ever delegated the time to do
it. Yeah, it takes time.
Yeah,
sure.
And I think I probably need to be a little smarter on a computer than I am. But anyway, I think a guy, if you want to put in the time and do that, I think you could probably learn a lot about them.
Oh, yeah.
And probably not too much effort.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And even just flipping through, like if you got them on your phone or a computer in a folder, it doesn't take a lot of time. Just flip through there, and if you've got it sorted, most of the time the computer will do it for you. You can sort it by date. Go in there and look for whatever days are coming up and see what you had going on last year or the year before that, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like you said, if you want to take it even farther than that, I was listening to a podcast with Mark Drury on it. He was talking about, he was on a flight from Texas to St. Louis or something like that, and he was going through, and this buck that he killed like a 216-inch deer, this year, a couple weeks ago, maybe.
He did kill a big one already.
He was talking, I think it was that buck he was talking about. He was going through all these trail camera pictures year over year and making a mental map of where this buck was using, what his home range was, and what time of year he was where and stuff like that. So, like you said, you can dive into that stuff as deep as you want to, even to just, you could make a physical map if you had the time and energy to do it.
You sure could.
You don't have to go that far, though, either. Just go in there and see. Like I said, October 24th, this is what I had last year. This is what I didn't have last year.
Yep.
And then you kind of base it off that. It's not going to be to the day, probably, might be, but they give you a pretty good idea for this time of year coming up.
It won't be far off. You know, deer go into rut, pre-rut, based on daylight, dark, moon, or whatever. It's not temperature. Now, activity later in the day, later in the morning and earlier in the evening may be temperature, but the rut itself is the daylight hours.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if it was temperature, there wouldn't be no deer in Texas.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
So to say that the daylight hours are the same October 24th this year as they were last year, pretty much.
Yeah.
And the moon phase may be a little bit different, and the temperature may be a little bit different, but the deer are there based on the daylight and dark.
Yeah, there's a reason that the pre-rut is where it is every year, and that's pretty much that last week of October, and there's a reason that that really hot part of the rut, best part to be out there, is generally the first week, and there's a reason that lockdown is generally the second week in the middle of the month. It's because there's time of day and they're
there's a
the
reason
day.
Shotgun season hits that hard spot every exactly. year is because yep. it's the same every year.
Yeah.
Whether it's 75 degrees or 40 degrees, maybe there may be a difference in the kill because they're moving more in the daylight, like you said. But there's
a lot of factors of guys yeah. hunting and mm-hmm. temperature, yada, yada, yada. But
they're yeah. still going to be at that same phase.
Yes.
Yep. Generally. So
I have read a publication I can remember even. A guy wrote he had tracked mature buck daylight pictures that he had got over the years. And if he got one in daylight, and he was only hunting, I mean, giants, you know. He's only interested in 170s and up. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm calling a giant. Anyway.
Yeah, that's fair.
He said if he had those things moving in daylight on a certain day, he was going to do his best to hunt as close to that picture where he got that picture the day before, that day, and the following day, mm-hmm. the next year. Mm-hmm. And he said it would shock you, you know, as long as they're still alive,
right.
how close they might be to that.
Yep.
I've never forgotten that. I don't know. I think their movement patterns would be real close, yep. But I certainly can't say, you know, that it's going to be exact. But if he was there once, you know, he was there once for a reason.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think like October, let's just say October 24th, just an mm-hmm. arbitrary date. Last year, if the temperature was 40, and this year, if the temperature's 80, probably not going to be the same movement.
Correct.
He might be in the same area, but he might be moving at 3 o'clock in the morning instead yep. of 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I think that's where your variant comes in more yeah. so than the specific date. I think yeah. it's temperature-wise.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, where don't discount those nighttime photos, because a lot of the cameras nowadays, you'll be able to see the temperature. So maybe you mm-hmm. look at that picture from October 24th last year, and there's a nighttime picture of this really nice buck.
Yeah.
And you got him on three nights in a row, 24th, 25th, 26th, in mm-hmm. the same general area, but it was 75 degrees during the day, whereas mm-hmm. this year, maybe it's going to be 60 degrees during the day. So maybe he's still in that same area.
Yep.
But maybe this year, he's going to be in the daylight, or yeah. vice versa. It may be that last year, he was there in the daylight. This year, it's hot, and he's going to be there at night, but that's something to consider, too. I don't think you should discount nighttime pictures because they're at night. I think you can still learn a lot from them, where that deer's at, where he's going, where he's bedding from that. And then, like I said, take that weather into consideration, too, if you're looking year over year.
Yeah.
But that's kind of everything I wanted to hit on for this week as far as like the article about the scrapes and be hunting those, and then as what we're going to be doing for the pre-rut. So we'll get another one done next week, and we'll be talking about some more, a little bit of that pre-rut stuff, but then we'll be hitting on, because we'll have another week until we do another one, starting on some rut stuff. So that's exciting coming up this next week. But you got any last thoughts on pre-rut hunting or anything like that, Nate?
Don't burn yourself out yet. We're going to start seeing more movement, you know. Still try to stay smart. Don't burn yourself out yet. It is just barely starting to crack open, you know. These buck movements, it's just starting to take off. So don't burn yourself out yet before it gets good.
Mm-hmm. I would say that it might be a good week to do a little cull shooting. If you've got a particular buck that you want to cull, might be a good time to get that out of the way early. Don't ruin your hunting stand and your hunting spot for your big boys to cull one. But if you get the opportunity, might be the time to do that.
Yep. Yeah, don't let him breed anymore.
Well, you know, there's a lot, little be said for that. You know?
Yep.
I want to eventually do a podcast on that, because there's a whole lot of studies and research out there on like the genetics and whether or not killing that 5-year-old buck that's a 4-point will really keep from having more 5-year-old bucks that are 4-points and all that. I don't know, but I know there's a ton of research out there on it, and I'm sure there's probably some one way and probably some the other, but we'll have to get into that at some point on a podcast, probably either late in the season when we're thinking about doing that kind of stuff, or after the season. But anyway, I was going to say, like you said, don't burn yourself out yet. I'm still not really hunting all day sits. Save that stuff for November.
Oh, yeah.
If the weather's not right, still maybe think about either staying on the outside of that, not messing anything up, or just staying home and doing something else and make the wife happy, whatever it is. But get out there and hunt on the good days for sure. Even on the bad days, if you want to get out there, get out there. Just be smart about it. So that'll do it for this week. We'll catch you guys again next week. Thanks for listening. And I was going to mention before I get off of here, if you're not in it already, get in the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Big Buck Contest. We're doing that for the first time this year. So we're trying to get more people in it. We do have a certain number that we have to hit for it to happen. So I can't just pull that money out of the air and for the prizes and have them sitting there for you guys. So we need a certain amount of people to get in to cover at least the cost of the prizes so we can do the event. So if you got buddies, tell them to get in it too. If you're not in it yet, go register. You can do that at Ridge Hunter Outdoors. Go to the link at the top or the tab at the top that says Big Buck Contest. Click on that. You can register, hit view details to pay your entry fee. It's just $50. Think about all the crap that you spend $50 on that you don't need. So go do that if you haven't yet, guys. But thanks for listening, and we'll catch you again next week.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.